Peter Hamby on the rise of political violence and conspiracy theories on the left.
I was the first year ever that left-wing violence and or plots surpass right-wing violence and or plots. It's only eight plots. That's only eight plots. And this is another thing I need to say. The left was, there was no violence, no plots for like 30 years. Most of the actual deaths from political violence in this country over the last 30 years have come from right-wing political violence. And we're talking like in the hundreds, okay? And so, yes, the baseline for Democrats and the left, whatever the coalition is, was very low. It just has ticked up. You have to call it out and say there's no room for it. And the other thing worth talking about, it is the conspiracy theorizing. And those two are not the same, but they are connected. You know, the people who I think tend to commit acts of violence in the name of politics, like, seize on conspiracy theories. They do. Mm-hmm. Social media has rampantly changed how people's instincts when it comes to responding, gathering facts. And, you know, I think that's hurt everybody. It's hurt everybody across the board. And you know, I just think that you see it more now on the left than you used to. I sting out that article with a quote from Isaac Asimov, who became a big Democrat later in his life, hated Nixon. And he said, like, the anti-intellectual strain in this country was always on the right, and liberals would fight ignorance with knowledge. And conservatives would fight knowledge with ignorance. There's a lot more ignorance out there, man, on the left now. I'm sorry. They're just...
Who is this guy? This guy's based.
And, like, maybe I'm just being idealistic about, you know, the great thinkers of the American left and what they cared about compared to the right. But it just feels like the fever swamps of the internet are just grabbing otherwise normal people and yanking them in. And it's depressing to me.
Random people on the internet thing, man. Democrats aren't the ones saying this.
Uh-oh. We've got Israel comments. Hell yeah. This second guy is ridiculous and the type of pearl clutching. When they go low, we go high Democrat. That's sinking us. Is this guy the second guy? Wait, what is his overall thesis? Hold on, I gotta hear.
Peter, welcome back to the pod. Good to see you.
Good to see you, John.
All right, so I want to start with your piece on...
I already banned like 10 people on that thread. Nice try, though.
Based.
Political violence. You wrote, Democratic elected and other party leaders vehemently condemn political violence all the time, but many on the left have become too comfortable celebrating violence or bad luck that befalls their Trumpian enemies. They are too loose with their language, too cozy with conspiracies that can lead to a dark place. Now, you're very clear in this piece.
Oh, never mind. Different thread. Just kidding.
You wrote after the assassination attempt at the White House Correspondents Center, very clear about the ways in which the right looks past Trump's calls to violence, exploits tragedies to target the left. But even still, I am sure there are people hearing this and thinking the most powerful person on the earth encouraged an insurrection, seeks to jail his enemies, celebrates the deaths of people like Robert Mueller and Rob Reiner, and you're talking about random people on the internet. So what are you seeing and why do you think it's important?
I think the phrase random people on the internet actually matters, first of all. And I do want to say thank you for saying that, acknowledging that part of the piece, because I felt like I wrote 10 paragraphs about Caroline Leavitt mischaracterizing or lying about how various people, Hakeem Jeffries, use terms like warfare, quote unquote, to refer to redistricting, redistricting wars. I mean, we've both been in politics for a long time. People use terms like combat or murder-suicide or just violent martial terms. This comes up in sports commentary all the time.
Shakespeare was familiar with metaphor as well, I think.
Yes, yes.
And I consider Hakeem Jeffries the Shakespeare of people that do the alphabet.
Yeah, I do too. I consider the Nas of people who do the alphabet. Mm-hmm. He would like that reference. I think that the random people on the internet thing matters. And I thought about this with John Favreau, other John, who, after Charlie Kirk was killed, noticed, random people on the internet, random TikTokers celebrating his death. And even as I was walking in here, Taylor Lorenz posted a tweet, or maybe not a tweet, maybe a blue sky or a thread, that people are using the sound of Charlie Kirk getting shot, the gunshot, to do quick cut edits of outfit changes. And that just, again, diminishes, I think, what happened. And people are using the sound of Charlie Kirk getting shot, the gunshot, to do quick cut edits of outfit changes. And that just, again, diminishes, I think, what happened. And like, you don't have to like Charlie Kirk. This is our thing, John. I know coming in here, like, this is a founding principle of Crooked Media. And I feel like this came from John Leavitt brain, which is the DC media's tendency to both sides thing. That is not me. And for the people listening, I'm not that journalist. But I was there in the ballroom. And part of it, too, is I've read polls, right? Like, in the first Trump term, obviously, in the Obama years.
Wait, he's talking about this. This Charlie Kirk prom trend is genuinely disgusting. This is what moral rot looks like.
Counting gang violence.
Great.
This is what Asma was watching. Oh, man.
Counting or not counting gang violence.
Great.
This is sick, man. Young.
This guy, oh, my God. Dude, after the onslaught of fucking anti-BLM jokes, of George Floyd jokes, of all the fucking memes, these guys are going to pearl clutch. It's actually just so transparent. I like how he has to have the camera here for like his reaction to show how completely not funny this is and how super serious he need to be about all this.
Another video saying, this is so funny, OMFG.
I can't watch these people cry. I don't care. Sorry.
You know, people blamed Trump and Republicans for the crazy, for the conspiracy theories. Voters did. NPR had a poll, I think, in 2017 saying 70% of voters blame Trump and Republicans for the toxicity in our politics. And, you know, there was a moral and intellectual high ground, I think, long in the Democratic Party. There hasn't been widespread political violence coming from the left since the 70s with the Weather Underground, Black Panthers, etc. There's obviously been anti-government violence. You've got like Black Bloc Antifa types and whatever. But there has been an uptick in partisan motivated
not just violence, but plots. There was somebody who showed up at the Capitol last year wanting to kill Pete Hegseth. That person was arrested. There's obviously two of the three assassins, attempted assassins on Donald Trump, sounded like they had left-leaning political views. And again, back to the random people on the internet thing.
The last guy for sure did. The Tyler Robinson guy, I'm sorry. There is just no, we can't one-drop rule ideology for leftists. That's just bullshit, okay? We're not playing that game. If this guy would have been 22 years old, raised in a woke SJW dyed-haired community with a whole bunch of trans people, it doesn't matter what. This guy could have said the most right-wing shit ever for the last 6 months and nobody would have given a fuck. The idea that this guy raised in the white Mormon community with MAGA parents is all of a sudden treated as a leftist because he was dating a trans person? Like, this is like the most conservative thing ever, is to be secretly addicted to cock, especially for Mormons. And you're telling me that we're going to count this person as a leftist? Give me a break. Come on.
It's not coming from Democratic politicians. It's not. It's really not. Now, there's like Jasmine Crockett posted a conspiracy theory the other day that the attack on the Washington Hilton might have been a false flag.
Oh, shit. I'm thinking of Tyler Robinson, the shooter on Trump, sorry, or on Charlie Kirk. I'm sorry. The weird guy. Fuck, I don't remember his name. I feel bad. The one who killed the firefighter. I'm pretty sure that dude was a registered Republican. The guy outside. I don't know about the guy outside. Is that outside the White House? He didn't even shoot anything, right? I didn't look at that guy's ideological background. Or I don't know if that guy had a coherent one. That guy seemed a little bit loony, like a little schizo-y. And then the last guy for sure seemed like a liberal, I guess like super pro-Ukraine, seemed like a big driver for, I guess like his political stuff.
Or whatever. The problem is the diminishing power of people like me in the mainstream press and the diminishing ability of normie politicians to, you know, get out there in the information ecosystem and have people hear them. That stuff is being replaced just by noise and slop on the internet. And it does seem like to me, and I think the evidence in the polling bears this out, that, you know, liberals and progressives, and by the way, some of these might just be fake bots. They might, you know, J.D. Vance likes to totally, and the right, completely exploit, you know, even the fringiest thing that you found on the internet and pretend it's like the mainstream view of the Democratic Party. And I make clear in the piece, as you read, Democrats aren't the ones saying this. It is, though, kind of ambient on the internet. And I think, I actually wanted to ask you about this. The Michelle Obama, they, you know, when they go low, we go high thing. That feels dead and gone in like millennial cringe at this point. In the second Trump term, it has been celebrated that like we're going to fight dirty. I'm not trying to be civility police either, dude.
Yeah,
at
yeah.
all.
No,
but like
no.
People just feel like, okay, we're going to play on their terms, get in their sandbox. We're going to throw punches, call names, and then you know, then maybe you end up with a guy who's got a screw loose, who hears
it, like again, this is one of the big issues that I talk about with media as well. Like if sorry, fuck, I have to get rid of this impression. I have this reaction when I'm about to say some shit that's just like so fucking obvious that it shouldn't have to be said. I just don't want to even talk about it. I just want to play video games. It should not be acceptable if you're doing reporting or punditry or whatever that you can say they or them. That should not be, no non-binary pronouns anymore. You need to start specifying who you're talking about. The reason why is because I think it would actually offer an insane amount of clarity into the conversations. Because when he says things like
term, it has been celebrated that like we're going to fight dirty. I'm not trying to be civility police either, dude.
Yeah,
at all.
No,
but like
no.
People just feel like, okay, we're going to play on their terms, get in their sandbox. We're going to throw punches, call names, and then
who though? Who's saying that? It's random people on Twitter. How do you know that? Who's the one that's platforming and highlighting them? It's the Twitter algorithm, right? That's what you need to be talking about. Not this idea. You can platform or spotlight literally anybody you want. You can find any opinion in the country. 340, 350 million people. You can manufacture any story that you want. It's about what's being spotlighted and then what's being shoved in front of everybody's face for them to react to, think it's normal, and then also jive with. Like that's the issue. Yeah.
And you know, then maybe you end up with a guy who's got a screw loose, who hears all this stuff on the internet and thinks, I've got to go kill the rapist, fascist, pedophile in the White House. I just think...
Have you heard or watched the recent debate between Counterpoints and Pisco or Tomfoolery and Pisco about leftist / Hassan? I tried to watch some of the Counterpoints one. The Pisco debate's, the problem is that it's like a 10-hour debate stretched into 3 hours somehow. So I don't know. If you can link me a relevant part, I'll watch, but I'm not going to go through 3 hours of rambling and meta talk before I get to the point.
That it's easier to hear the crazy stuff that the algorithms have poured gasoline on than it ever was, and you just hear it more on the left than I think you used to.
Yeah, it's like there's so many parts that you have to tease out, right? And yeah. Like, there's a big distinction. It isn't coming from the vast majority of Democratic politicians, right? And there is just a distinction between how responsible elected Republicans are, including the president, yes, versus how responsible elected Democrats are. Even this week, we saw what is obviously a ridiculous prosecution of James Comey. The number of Republicans refusing to criticize that or openly embracing that. Members of Congress saying, "Well, look at all the other bad things Jim Comey did," right? It is distinct from political violence, but embracing the jailing of your political enemies on specious reasons is adjacent to a politics in which people can celebrate political violence. But the challenge is, most Americans deplore political violence. All the mainstream politicians on the left can deplore political violence. 95% of people say the right thing. Then the next day, 100% of people spend the day talking about what the 5% said and how heinous it is and how it's actually justified and all the rest.
He's closer.
You know, we at Crooked Media, I feel like we take some flack from all directions for this, but we obviously denounce Republicans when they try to exploit political violence. We also try to go after what we see people, when we see people justifying it. John, as you mentioned, did that as well in the piece. But if everybody but a few are doing the right thing, but we end up talking about what the wrong thing is, like, I don't know what the right thing, how do you respond in a media environment like that, in which we try to model best behavior. The Democrats say the right thing, but you have Republicans that are going to pull out the worst comments from the internet. You have an algorithm that's going to elevate the most exciting and morally depraved comments.
True.
Like, what do we do? Okay, I agree. There's a problem.
True.
What do we do?
Yeah. Well, that's getting you to say that. I mean, you're a sophisticated thinker about this stuff. It is important to say that there was a problem. And I want to say this isn't just my feelings. This is me being a hack political journalist. I should point out also in the piece, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, which has measured this and has kept track of incidents. 2025 was the first year ever that left-wing violence and plots and or plots surpassed right-wing violence and or plots. Say, it's only 8 plots. It's only a plot. And this is another thing I need to say. Again, like the left was, there's no violence, no plots for like 30 years. Most of the actual deaths from political violence in this country over the last 30 years have come from right-wing political violence. And we're talking like in the hundreds. Okay. And so, yes, the baseline for Democrats and the left, whatever the coalition is, was very low. It just has ticked up. But I think you're though right, John. I remember when I worked at CNN back when you were in the White House in the 2010s, there was this like, do you remember watching like cable news in that era? And CNN, where I worked or wherever, like a random Republican state legislator in Missouri would say something loony about abortion or something racist about Obama. And we would all elevate it. We'd be like, this is an example of the Republican Party being nuts. And while the Republican Party does have a tendency to accommodate, and by the way, this is just history, you know, the Birchers and the conspiracy theorists and whatever, you'd hear from someone on Capitol Hill, like someone from like John Thune's office, like, why the fuck are you talking about this random guy in Missouri? And so that is a absolute attentional problem that the press has and kind of always has. By the way, since then, that random state senator in Missouri is now like probably on Capitol Hill in the mainstream of the Republican Party. I just think it is what you guys do. It's that you have to call it out and say there's no room for it. And the other thing we're talking about isn't just violence. It is the conspiracy theorizing. And those two are not the same, but they are connected. You know, the people who I think tend to commit acts of violence in the name of politics, like seize on conspiracy theories. They do. I noticed this on Snapchat. I work at Snap and I posted on Snap. I had a bunch of people in my comments being like fake, staged, whatever. Like, it's not, we don't know that those people are even Democrats. They could just be some teenager like on like sitting in their basement somewhere. But this has been happening. Again, this gets to the higher intellectual standard that I think Democrats used to hold themselves to. In Obama's term, at some point, some press conference in the tan suit era, it might've been like Ed Henry. It was like in the White House briefing room. And there was the latest outrage of the day. Whatever somebody wanted Obama to be outraged about. I think it was Ed Henry. He said, "Mr. President, why are you more outraged?" And I tried to look this up before coming in. I couldn't find it. Someone listening, please find it. It's probably in Favreau's encyclopedic brain. But Obama looks at him and goes, "Because I haven't read the briefs." And that was Obama being a lawyer. But it was also just a smart person who hewed closely to facts and didn't want to spout off on something where he didn't like know the baseline information. And we've come a long way on the internet since then. Like, social media has rampantly changed how people's instincts when it comes to responding, gathering facts. And, you know, I think that's hurt everybody. It's hurt everybody across the board. And you know, I just think that you see it more now on the left than you used to. I sting out that article with a quote from Isaac Asimov, who became a big Democrat later in his life, hated Nixon, like just a raging Democrat. And he said, like, the anti-intellectual strain in this country was always on the right. And liberals would fight ignorance with knowledge. And conservatives would fight knowledge with ignorance. There's a lot more ignorance out there, man, on the left now. I'm sorry, there just is. And like, maybe I'm just being idealistic about, you know, the great thinkers of the American left and what they cared about compared to the right. But it just feels like the fever swamps of the internet are just grabbing otherwise normal people and yanking them in. And it's depressing to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard not.
Are we going to talk about more specifics on that? Like, what are the left-wing conspiratorial thoughts or the left-wing pieces of misinformation you feel are becoming very popular that weren't before? Are we gonna dig into that at all? Or
it's depressing to me.
Yeah, I don't know. It's hard not, you know, to be nostalgic for how we used to have information. I see it too, and I do think it's more than just a few random people. There is something that has happened, and it isn't coming from the politicians. I do think there's a bigger shift, and I think it's important. And it isn't. I see it too, and I do think it's more than just a few random people. There is something that has happened, and it isn't coming from the politicians.
On the left, it's not. On the right, it is. The right is locked into that social media shit. The left, the lawmakers at least, are not at all.
I do think there's a bigger shift, and I think it's important, as you pointed out, political violence in our country still is very, very rare.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I feel like there's these two ideas you have to have in your mind at the same time. One being that we can't allow acts of violence by individuals who are united regardless of ideology, by a willingness to do violence, right? That's the most important thing about a mass shooter, about the person that shot Charlie Kirk, this person, the person that shot at Gabby Giffords, right? That they're willing to go to this extreme and do violence. And sometimes their rationales are cogent. Sometimes their rationales are nonsense. It's the act of violence that unites them. And there's something rising, whether it's people willing to shoot up a school, people wanting to go out a blaze of glory. And we cannot arrange our society around that. We can't allow that to warp our politics too much because it is so rare in our society. But at the same time, like, it does seem to be like an emergent property of the amount of vitriol, hate, lack of empathy, cruelty on the internet and beyond, I think that Trump is both a cause of and a symptom of. And I struggle with how you think about those two things. But the comfort that people have, right, whether it's the shooting of the United Healthcare CEO or the killing of Charlie Kirk, that is morally wrong before you even get to whether it will encourage future violence. It said something really ugly about our politics and our culture. And I do think that that is real.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I struggle with.
There's something else interesting. I just
like, here's the thing that people don't understand. I used to complain about this all the time. When you talk about things, there is this threshold where when you describe something, and you can describe this thing really, 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 really hard, and at some point you get into a prescription. Some you might call this like an is or an ought. So one thing that drove me crazy about Jordan Peterson was that he would do this thing where he would say women in the workplace aren't getting along with men. Men don't know what the rules are. It's leading to a whole bunch of problems. It seems like it's only getting worse. We have no idea how we can solve any of these issues. And he'll stop right here. And then I think Kathy Newman did this a lot, where she would kind of ask him this question here. It's like, oh, so should women not be working anymore? And Jordan Peterson could always say, I didn't say that. I didn't actually say that. I never said that. I never said that. What? I never said that at all. I never said that. I. And he didn't technically, but he was playing like this game of descriptively edging you up until you would prescriptively blow your load. Like, he does this all the time. There's a certain amount of this that necessitates like this. There's a certain amount of this that will always like lead to this. And if you're intelligent in life, you understand that this is inevitable. One of the reasons why you tell your, you should never ever, well, generally speaking, you shouldn't complain about your significant other to your friend group, because you don't usually tell them good things about your significant other, because you're just not maybe having those conversations, and people really remember bad things. So when you complain about your significant other, oh, like he did this, like, oh, he called me a name, like, oh, we got into a fight, he ignored me, oh, we went to sleep last night, we didn't talk to each other. At some point, your friends are like, bro, you got to fucking leave this motherfucker. They're all going to be pushed over here, even though you're not necessarily thinking it. Like, this is just like the natural result of all of this descriptive edging. And when you look at something like Luigi Mangione, right? Okay. Well, healthcare is in a state in the United States where we could give the maximum level of healthcare to every single person. The only reason we can't do it is because insurance companies exist to deny claims and deprive people of healthcare that is not only rightfully theirs, they already even paid for it. They get denied for no reason by merchants of death who head up these companies like United Healthcare, and innocent poor people and even middle-class people are sentenced to death for no reason other than to line the pocketbooks of these yacht-sailing merchants of death. I don't understand how you think you could say all of this, and then it's like, somebody killed him? What? Like, yeah, that's, of course. If you're never going to look at any of this, then, well, then you don't really have a right to complain about any of this, in my opinion. This is why people want to do the genocide. This is why people want to do the genocide thing or the apartheid thing with Israel. Oh, it's a genocide. Oh, they're an apartheid state. Oh, it's a occupation. Oh, what's the third one? It's apartheid, genocide, and what's the other aside or whatever? Ethnic cleansing or whatever. When you do all of these things, it's obvious what the prescription should be, even if you never say it. If you really do hold all these descriptions to be true, then you just shouldn't be surprised when this happens. Like I said, the same thing for January 6th, right? Like, if you really do believe in the big lie that Trump sold for, you know, a year, well, then of course you should revolt and try to overthrow the government, because apparently the Democrats have already stolen the election from you. So
not at the moment, it won't, because we don't know what the rules are.
Do you think men and women can work in the workplace together?
I don't know.
Yes, I...
And like ready-made ideological solutions don't work. They just make it worse.
But come on, that's just like a maxim. You're not actually addressing the question, which is like, isn't there harm that is trying to be solved?
There isn't a question. There's a set of questions and no one's posing them. Here's a question. Can men and women work together in the workplace?
Yes,
I do it. How do you know?
Because I work with a lot of women.
Right. Well, it's been happening for what, 40 years? And things are deteriorating very rapidly at the moment in terms of the relationships between men and women. Is there sexual harassment in the workplace? Yes. Should it stop? That'd be good. Will it? Well, not at the moment it won't, because we don't know what the rules are.
Do you think men and women can work in the workplace together?
I don't know.
Without sexual harassment?
We'll see.
How many years will it take for men and women working in the workplace together?
More than 40.
To get a sense?
We don't know what the rules are. Like, what, here's a rule. How about no makeup in the workplace?
Why would that be a rule?
Why should you wear makeup in the workplace? Isn't that sexually provocative?
No.
It's not?
No.
Well, what is it then? What's the purpose of makeup?
Some people would like to just put on makeup.
Why?
I don't know why.
Why do you make your lips red? Because they turn red during sexual arousal. That's why. Why do you put rouge on your cheeks? Same reason.
I mean, look.
How about high heels?
About high heels?
What about them? They're there to exaggerate sexual attractiveness. That's what high heels do. Now, I'm not saying that people shouldn't use sexual displays in the workplace. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that that is what they're doing. And that is what they're doing.
Do you feel like a serious woman who does not want sexual harassment in the workplace, do you feel like if she wears makeup in the workplace, that she is somewhat being critical?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do think that.
One of the things that you've talked about is that a lot of times you talk to these young men who are sort of flirting with far-right ideologies, and you try and bring them back. Like, what is that process like? How do you bring someone back from the far-right?
Tell them a better story.
What is a better story?
Grow the hell up. Take your place in the world. You've got something to contribute. Make a plan. Live as an individual. Stay away from the identity politics pathology. It's just an excuse for failing to live your life in a respectable and noble manner. It's a way better story than, like, go wave your idiot far-right flag at some rally with a bunch of pasty-faced morons. What kind of pathetic...
So it's annoying because, like, any normal person, like, all of Jordan Peterson's fans hear this and, like, oh, yeah, women can't be in the workplace. But then if a left person ever confronts him, it's like, didn't you say that women shouldn't, like, work with men and that we shouldn't have that integration anymore? He'll rightfully say, I never said that, because he didn't, because he's just descriptively pushed you all the way to the border, but he himself hasn't taken the step over. It's just a very annoying way of, I don't know. It's just an annoying way of conducting yourself.
Culture, and I do think that that is real.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I struggle with.
There's something else interesting. This is an obvious thought, but I just thought about it. When you think about Luigi, you think about the Butler shooter, we don't know his politics, and the guy from the Hilton. All these people.
I don't even think, I don't care, because I would just as quickly label Luigi as like a far leftist shooter, because I hate far leftists. I don't even know. I think the Luigi guy is like a little bit schizo. I'm not sure how politically oriented that guy even is. I think he's like a little bit, I don't know how old he is. He might be getting into the age where that psychotic shit starts to emerge, but he didn't really seem much like he had like a super strong political foundation of stuff. His manifesto was expressly political. I would have to go link me it, I guess, if you want.
The Charlie Kirk shooter are young. And, like, obviously there's the idea of the school shooter and the serial killer and the lone wolf killer out there. You tend to be white men. But all of these examples are people who grew up online. We grew up online. But, like, in middle school and high school, I just had AOL. But, like, these people grew up with phones in their pockets. And so they have so many more touch points to dark places.
His manifesto was political, but not coherently so. Just because you're doing a thing that's, like, political doesn't mean that you are political. But I don't know how to explain that. This came up in that in the one battle after another thing. Like, you can talk about politics, but you're not really... I don't know how to explain it. Luigi Manifesto. Is this the whole thing? Just this, like, long paragraph? To the feds, I'll keep this short, because I do respect what you do for our country to save you a lengthy investigation. I state plainly that I wasn't working with anyone. This was a fairly trivial, some elementary social engineering, basic CAD, a lot of patience. The spiral notebook, if present, has some straggling notes and to-do lists that illuminate the gist of it. My tech is pretty locked down because I work in engineering, so probably not much info there. I do apologize for any strife or traumas, but it had to be done. Frankly, these parasites simply had it coming. A reminder, the U.S. has the number one most expensive healthcare system in the world, yet we rank roughly 42 in life expectancy. United is the indecipherable largest company in the U.S. by market cap, behind only Apple, Google, Walmart. It has grown and grown, but has our life expectancy? No, the reality is these indecipherable have simply gotten too powerful, and they continue to abuse our country for immense profit because the American public has allowed them to get away with it. Obviously, the problem is more complex, but I do not have space, and frankly, I do not pretend to be the most qualified person to lay out the full argument, but many have illuminated the corruption and greed. And then he cites Rosenthal and Moore decades ago, and problems simply remain. It is not an issue of awareness at this point, but clearly, power games at play. Evidently, I am the first to face it with such brutal honesty. Yeah, you could say this skews left, I guess, but it's not like, compared to like the fucking Unabomber, I feel like this is not like a massive like political manifesto, you know? Or didn't he write something in prison that he sent out too? I feel like I saw something more. He wrote to the PBD podcast. What did he write?
Places on the internet, but in dark places. That's sort of what I'm talking about. It's that, you know, like Jennifer Welch on the I've Had a podcast the other day was entertaining.
That didn't really sound schizo. No, this doesn't sound schizo at all, actually. I thought I saw something more weird. Maybe it was the prison note, but maybe it wasn't actually crazy. Maybe I'd have to, let me reread it and think about it. Oh, this. I think there was a handwritten version of this, right? This is the PDF scanned version, I think.
I'm thinking.
Or maybe he did type it out. Last month on May 6th, I turned 27 years old. Mark the occasion. I took some time to reflect on 27 things I'm grateful for. My friends for being there when I needed it most. My family for blank. My personal life is none of your business. The many talented and generous individuals who, if not for my current predicament, I never would have crossed paths with. Letters. I spend each day between the same four walls of my unit, where I receive both holiday cards sent in December and birthday cards sent between March and May, creating a bizarre and disorienting Groundhog Day scenario where every day is both Christmas and my May 6th birthday. Nonetheless, I'm incredibly grateful. The monotony of my physical environment is offset by the variety and richness of the lives I experience through letters, multi-page life stories, retellings of workplace conversations, stream of consciousness journal entries, admissions of greatest fears, eager recaps of recent triumphs, mothers reliving senseless tragedies, soulful creations, generous offers, advice. The MDC mailroom, which has to date photocopied and processed thousands of letters sent to me from over 40 countries. Your efforts are appreciated by so many. Memes, as one of my wisest correspondents put it, laughter is louder than logic and makes a lot more sense. The countless books I've been sent. While I've never read the vast majority of them, I've loved facilitating this collective practice in Sundoku and have distributed these books to many grateful inmates. My favorites include Ayn Rand's Anthem, Patrick Bet-David's Your Next Five Moves, and Ray Bradbury's Fahrenheit 451. Independence media / creators, publications like The American Prospect, citizen documentaries like Jumi Kim, and citizen journalists, of which there are too many to name. My cellmate, Jay, who, despite spending half of every day inside a shared birdcage and being sentenced to a decade away from his six kids who he loves, tolerates the clutter of all my papers, shares his unique wisdom, and doesn't hesitate to humble me when I need it. He reads more of my books than I do and appreciates all the Calvin and Hobbes. The MDC staff and COs, who are nothing like what the Shawshank Redemption or the Stanford Prison Experiment had me to believe, while the occasional minor dissent arises, I found that they are people too and largely there to help. Chicken Thursdays and Sweet Baby Ray's BBQ sauce. Sorry, vegans, it's the realest food here, and I need my strength. Keyboard shortcuts. There is no print multiple option. M-A, click, click, enter, XP, click, click, enter, repeat. The some 30,000 individuals around the globe who have come together to donate over $1 million to my legal fund, enabling me to retain a world-class defense team across three concurrent prosecutions. Karen Friedman Agnifilo. Need I say more? I have no idea who that is. The other members of my legal team who are also pretty great, Latinas for Mangione, everyone who has donated to my commissary account, whose contributions have funded a tablet, songs, stamps, hygiene items. You can get a tablet in prison? What the fuck? BBQ sauce, Goya Sazon, or Sazon, peanut butter and lots of tuna packets, the Bop music catalog. Luigi is currently listening to Television, The Drug of a Nation. By the disposable heroes of dot dot dot, the trials that I've endured, which have, I hope, prepared me for anything that might lie ahead. My lucky long sleeve, hearts, the creatives, the artist's task is to save the soul of mankind, and anything less is a dithering while Rome burns. Terence McKenna. The conservatives who fiercely conserve the aspects of our society that makes us great. The liberals who liberate us from the outdated aspects of our society that prevent us from being greater. Being born in America, she is haunted by her past. She is sick. She is plagued by inner turmoil. Such is her nature as a nation of individuals. She is young, in the midst of an adolescent identity crisis. But despite all her flaws, her frame is robust and her potential unmatched. Free speech, the basis of our way of life. When you tear out a man's tongue, you are not proving him a liar. You're only telling the world that you fear what he might say. George. And finally, blank. Okay, never mind. This, I guess, isn't really schizo. I don't really know how I would characterize his political beliefs, though. Vaguely sloppulist, I guess, maybe?
These conspiracy theories about how Trump was, like, this was a false flag so that he could develop the ballroom. I'm not saying she's spreading hate speech, but, like, that's one of the ascendant podcasters on the left. Like, there aren't any real epistemological boundaries, I feel like, at this point. And, you know, you can be a liberal and listen to Jennifer Welch or this, or go on a Twitch stream or whatever, but all of those young people... like you said, I'm not being nostalgic for an old media time necessarily. I'm just like, I call myself a student of media history, but they don't know a time of like monoculture, Walter Cronkite, anything. There's no.
Why did you file for spoliation? Because I don't have a countersuit. I don't know what's the point. I'm not going to get. I mean, like their case, they don't even have subject matter jurisdiction. They don't have anything for their case. So it's not. I don't even know. It's not like I'm even fighting anything right now. I'm boxing ghosts.
Necessarily, I'm just like, I call myself a student of media history. But they don't know a time of like monoculture, Walter Cronkite, anything. There's no shared facts, and like all, you know, it just the conspiracy that depresses me.
Yeah, like the conspiracy theory embrace that we see across the board. I do think there's something about
some people think it's just fun. By the way, like I have friends who are like conspiracy theories are fun.
Yeah, there's something about the way in which the internet encourages you that we're all being encouraged to embrace easy and quick comfort in across our lives, and social media does that, right? Like you don't have to have any discipline of attention whatsoever. You can just get a jolt of something fun, something funny, something outrageous, whatever. Get a quick like hit of an endorphin or an emotion. You don't have to leave the house to see a movie. You can just stay in bed, whatever. You can have food come to your house. Like we're easy to satisfy, uncomfortable with any kind of discomfort. And when there's something horrible that happens, like the killing of Charlie Kirk, in which you, I think, morally are called to denounce the killing of someone you found reprehensible, that tiny bit of friction, that tiny bit of discomfort, the whole, there's a whole algorithm that's telling you, you don't have to feel that anymore. And the same thing with someone trying to assassinate Donald.
A little bit, but also, like, sorry, it's that feeling again of having to say something so painfully fucking obvious, okay? The manager comes into your shift and you're a supervisor. The manager is not going to tell your employees what they need to do. And if all of your employees are fucking around, the manager is not going to look at all the employees and think all the employees are fucking around. The manager is going to think the supervisor is fucking around, okay? Every environment that you're in, you could be talking about teachers and classrooms or parents and kids. You could be talking about presidents and countries or managers and staff or CEOs and their businesses. Like, there's going to be a type of energy. There's going to be a type of engagement, attitude, culture that's set from the top down. Not to say that nothing beneath can ever deviate, but if the president of the United States, if the tone from the top that is radiating out to every single part of the Republican apparatus, if that tone is LOL Mueller died, LOL Rob Schneider died of TDS, LOL we should execute the six congressmen, LOL like, you know, shithole countries that are made of dirt, LOL we should denaturalize Ilhan Omar, LOL she fucked and married her brother, LOL, like, what the fuck do you expect? Like, I can't take anything seriously. I can't take criticism to anybody seriously in that environment. And there's no way for me to communicate that without, you know, retards like peers. Just like, oi, mate, you disavow, mate. Like, who the fuck cares? Who gives a fuck? Nobody cares. It doesn't matter. It truly doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking matter who gives a fuck. And it doesn't matter who disavows or says anything. If that's the tone from the top down, then all is lost.
Trump because of views you might agree with. Wouldn't it be nice if there were a way you didn't have to sit with that for even a moment? Well, guess what there is? Because it turns out maybe it was staged. And we live in a crazy world in which there were legitimate news stories that in Hungary, Trump's ally, there was a plan to stage an assassination attempt to help Viktor Orban in the final days of the election. That is real reporting about something real that very well could have happened in the world.
There's also a conspiracy theory that Trump wouldn't leave office if he lost.
Of course. Of course. And there was a conspiracy theory that...
No! That's not the same type of conspiracy theory, because Donald Trump himself has said that. Donald Trump himself has floated that idea. We just watched three, I think, were they federal judges? Is that what that hearing was for a Senate confirmation hearing? That none of them would say that Trump couldn't be president a third time. Trump has made hats that say Trump 2028 or whatever that he's giving out to other political people. Like, how can you call that a conspiracy theory the same way there's 9/11 conspiracy theories? It's not the same thing. That's not the same thing.
To help Viktor Orban in the final days of the election. That is real reporting about something real that very well could have happened in the world.
There's also a conspiracy theory that Trump wouldn't leave.
As we say in Dutch, a fish rots from the head down. Why would you say something in Dutch in English? Don't post fake shit in my chat.
Election. That is real reporting about something real that very well could have happened in the world.
There's also a conspiracy theory that Trump wouldn't leave office if he lost.
Of course. Of course. And there was a conspiracy theory that a powerful cabal of abusers were protecting Jeffrey Epstein. Like, a lot of people have come to believe that conspiracy theories had some merit. And the truth is, the great conspiracy theories always do begin with a kernel of...
Okay, but like, why do people think that? Why do people think that? Where do these ideas come from for the Epstein stuff?
The Joe Rogan Experience.
Let's just get to it because I know it's on people's mind.
No, fuck.
The Epstein thing, I got a lot to talk. This Epstein thing really kind of, it kind of like, it's like a tick burrowing under my skin. I get a call.
Let's go.
Yeah, this is going to get hairy. You guys ready?
Yes.
This guy was the deputy director of the FBI with Kash Patel, okay? Second in charge, FBI, with Kash Patel. Was. Now is a podcaster again, okay? Second in charge of the U.S. Federal Bureau of Investigation, FBI, okay? That's what he became, okay? What was he saying before then?
Yeah. More school. Yes. This is like live YouTube. You ready for this? I don't know if you guys are ready. I get a call, I don't know, about 4 years ago. It's from, let's say, a friend. Prior line of work thing, right? Guy says, listen. And this guy who calls me is an unimpeachable source. This guy's not like some ham and egg or tomato can guy throwing out some theory about a UFO he saw 72 years ago, whatever. This is like a legit no-nonsense guy. Guy you trust with your, you know, wife, kid, and car, right? He says, you know, I got sent on a temporary assignment once. And on that assignment, I got sent out with on the WCD detail, William Clinton detail. And I knew this guy well. And he says, Dan, I got to share this with someone. He's like, go on a plane, and Bill, you know, Clinton gets on the plane with this guy, and it turns out later the guy's Epstein. Now, this guy I'm talking to, this source, he don't know who, Jeffrey Epstein is. He's just getting on a plane doing the thing, the whole, you know, protection gig, right? He says, I get on the plane and there's these girls who are obviously not of age who are on this plane. They're clearly young. These are not women. These are girls. And he says, I see Clinton like disappear into the back with, he goes, I don't know what happened. I'm not saying what happened because all I know is he disappeared and these girls were back there or whatever. And he said they land at the next stop, wherever it was. And he goes up to the boss on the detail and he says, I ain't getting back on this plane. Because he's, remember, he's a temp. He's not, so he's not used to like whatever Clinton was up to with the whole shenanigans thing. And this guy's clear as the driven snowman. He don't want to mess around with this. He says, whatever just happened back there, like, I don't want any piece of it. You know, they sent him home. They sent that guy home. And he never, he's never tempted that detail again. Now, remember, all those.
By the way, I don't think Bill Clinton was ever even in the same plane ever as Epstein. There were four trips, I believe, that he took. But I don't think he was ever on a plane with Epstein. I don't think that ever came out anywhere. I just Googled this. Was Clinton and Epstein ever on a plane together? Yes, former President Bill Clinton flew on Jeffrey Epstein's private plane multiple times. But I don't believe they were ever even on a flight together. Or at least I haven't seen that. Some people will say 26 separate flights. But the reason is because it was four trips. And then every layover they counted as a different flight or whatever. Somebody in chat said it was for the Clinton Foundation. Maybe they did. Maybe there was a flight together. Wait, somebody said last paragraph. Oh, wait. While flight logs placed Clinton on the plane with Epstein, they did not show that Clinton was ever on a flight to Epstein's private island, Little St. James. Okay, so he was on at least one flight with Epstein, I guess. Okay, there you go.
BlackBerry's on that detail. Here's where the story gets super weird. The guy tells me, what is it, months or a couple weeks later, when you lose property in the Secret Service, an email goes out, say like, hey, I lost his phone, and it gets logged into NCIC or whatever it is, and everybody knows. So basically, if you find this guy's gun, God forbid, or his phone, it's now effectively stolen property, right? All of a sudden, all the BlackBerries on it.
That's not what that sentence said. Wait, what? Hold on, let me read. That is what they said. While flight logs placed Clinton on the plane with Epstein, that is what this sentence says. What do you mean that's not what the sentence says? Destiny, I'm retarded. He nuked himself. Okay, good job.
This morning, former President Bill Clinton releasing this new video.
Where was there one flight, or where was their flight to? Has that ever been released? I feel like if they have the flight logs and they've seen where he traveled, if they know the 26 legs, I feel like they should know which flight it was. But okay, ignore that point.
Detail for the agent starts showing up like, oh, this guy lost his BlackBerry. Holy shit. Wow, that's so crazy. How'd that happen? I'm like, no. He says, yeah.
Wait. Bongino's source was unimpeachable. Same source broke the kitty litter boxes in classroom story. Wait, that didn't come from Bongino on Joe Rogan's show, did it? He wasn't the guy who originated that, was he?
All the BlackBerries on that detail for the agents start showing up like, oh, this guy lost his BlackBerry. Holy shit. Wow, that's so crazy. How'd that happen? I'm like, no. He says, yes. He says it was the craziest thing. Like, oh, look, Agent Joey Bag of Donuts, missing BlackBerry. This is around the whole time, like the Clinton thing's going on. So fast forward this story, right? He tells me that about a year and a half after that, I'm in a green room at Fox, and I'm not going to say who because they didn't give me permission to share it, but the short story, but not who they are. Says, you know, Epstein's an intelligence asset for people in the Middle East, right? I'm like, no, I didn't know that. I'm like, you sure of that? The person, let's say, is like, I'm absolutely sure of that. That he's either a witting or unwitting asset, intelligence asset, meaning his plane and that island, the cameras, there's a big assumption out there that these videotapes were exclusively in the custody of Epstein. That's a huge mistake. The reason they wanted this story to go away is because there's an assumption like, oh yeah, Epstein had him. No, he wasn't the only one who had him, according to this source. These assets, that's why this blackmail story makes so much sense. Which Middle Eastern countries they are, I don't know. But this person, who's a very, very good reporter, I mean, aces, right? Swore Epstein was either a witting or unwitting intelligence asset. And they may have had his plane wired up. And they're the ones who have all this stuff. So the point is, to sum it up, how do you know some of these countries aren't going to some of these power players who aren't making decisions? Because, hey, you wouldn't want this video out there, right? How do you know?
100%.
I mean,
let's get personal with Mr. Gates, though. If this is a story of an adult man having adult relations with an adult female outside of his marriage, is it the biggest deal in the world that he made public? You know what I mean? What I'm interested in is the underage stuff, the creepos, that evidence coming out. I'm worried that they're doing this with the Bill Gates thing as like red meat, like, oh, look, oh, yeah. And it's like, it's not a criminal issue. It's a personal scandal. It's like, oh, wow, Bill Gates looks bad. But what about the Maxwell stuff? What about the actual client list? I don't think we should be satisfied by what we're hearing, and we should obviously want more.
I think you're totally right. I think that.
So this is Bongino on a podcast before going into the FBI. And then, do you guys remember? The only thing I can think of that this reminds me of is when Hassan had to talk to Cenk about the 9/11 comments, and it was just like a scolding moment. Do you remember when, it was a mainstream media interview, when these two had to answer questions about, was it this?
Right-wing political commentator Mindy Robinson goes,
people don't believe it.
Well,
why do I not have the original interview? Whatever, we can watch the show.
You said, but Jeffrey Epstein.
So we just heard, remember, unimpeachable source, Bongino said. And then after they're in office,
committed suicide. People don't believe it.
Well, I mean, listen, they have a right to their opinion, but as someone who has worked as a public defender, as a prosecutor, who's been in that prison system, who's been in the Metropolitan Detention Center, who's been in segregated housing, you know a suicide when you see one, and that's what that was.
He killed himself. I've seen the whole file. He killed himself.
Like, how are people not going to believe in conspiracies? Fuck, this was the interview.
Who said?
How
Jeffrey
are people?
Epstein?
You can't act like random liberal says retarded shit on Twitter, and some people believe it. To the director of the FBI and the co-director of the FBI, who prior to being in the government were saying they had unimpeachable sources linking Epstein to Clinton and all these other things, to now saying
committed suicide. People don't believe it.
Well, I mean, listen, they have a right to their opinion, but as someone who has worked as a public defender, as a prosecutor, who's been in that prison system, who's been in the Metropolitan Detention Center, who's been in segregated housing, you know a suicide when you see one, and that's what that
these
was.
These guys.
He killed himself. I've seen the whole file. He killed himself.
Epstein, right?
He had to go on to Joe Rogan and walk it all back. Like, yeah, even when they're not trying, and this guy's not a both sideser, whoever is opposite this guy, he's not a both sideser. I can tell he's not trying to be a both sideser. But even he's been a little bit mind-fucked by the algorithm. Even he's been a little bit algorithm mind-fucked. You see there's a hugely disproportionate source of misinformation here, right?
Orban, in the final days of the election, that is real reporting about something real that very well could have happened in the world.
There's also a conspiracy theory that Trump wouldn't leave office if he lost.
Of course. Of course. And there was a conspiracy theory that a powerful cabal of abusers were protecting Jeffrey Epstein. Like, a lot of people have come to believe that conspiracy theories had some merit. And the truth is, the great conspiracy theories always do begin.
Like, remember. Sorry.
So in the last few minutes, we've heard from Democrats blaming Republicans, Republicans blaming Democrats, but also President Donald Trump. He's been taunting Democrats on social media. What can you tell us?
Like, bruh. LOL conspiracy theory. LOL conspiracy theory. LOL conspiracy theory. Is it really that far-fetched to believe that the guy who had an entire conspiracy, or like three running, concurrently running conspiracies to overturn the election in 2020, would also try to run again in 2028? Is that really that hard to believe? Is that impossible to believe? Like, what? That's like the most believable thing. I didn't even call that a conspiracy. That's the most believable thing ever.
About maybe photos of their White House meeting where you can see Mr. Trump talking about this. And also what we're seeing there on the screen, Trump 2028 hats on his desk. What are you hearing about that?
Yeah, you're seeing that picture from the big meeting that happened here earlier in the week.
With a kernel of truth in them, or a lot of the great ones do. Like, so I understand like where that impulse comes from, and I understand how the internet feeds it.
Yeah.
That's not an internet. That was fed by cabinet line officials, deputy director of the FBI, and Donald Trump, the president of the United States. They're not they're not just from Twitter. They're not just random Twitter posts.
I think that it is incumbent upon Democratic politicians to try so hard to keep the what was Ernie in the trash can? Like, whatever. Just, like, push it down. Like, Mark Kelly came out with
Oscar was the Grouch.
Oscar.
Right? Ernie's the, or Bert and Ernie, just the happy gay couple.
Oscar was the Grouch. Yeah, sorry. No offense to the happy gay
couple.
Mark Kelly put out, I mean, who cares what Mark Kelly thinks? But, like, a Substack.
I care.
Sure, I care.
I care what Mark Kelly thinks.
I care. And I think you said the other day on this podcast, referencing Chris Murphy talking after the UnitedHealthcare murder. What was Ernie in the trash can? Like, whatever. Just, like, push it down. Like, Mark Kelly came out with
Oscar was the Grouch.
Oscar.
Right? Ernie's or Bert and Ernie, just the happy gay couple.
Oscar was the Grouch. Yeah, sorry. No offense to the happy gay
No.
couple. Mark Kelly put out, I mean, who cares what Mark Kelly thinks, but like a Substack.
I care.
Sure, I care.
I care what Mark Kelly thinks.
I care. And I think you said the other day on this podcast, referencing Chris Murphy talking after the UnitedHealthcare murder. I forget the anecdote. Why did this come up? I think like Nate Silver wrote about it, that he sort of said, like, I acknowledge why people like hate insurance companies. What did Chris
Murphy say? I was referencing people who had, I was referencing that someone, I think like a prominent conservative had said that the shooter at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, his rhetoric is indistinguishable from that of Chris Murphy, as if that's an indictment of Chris Murphy.
Got it.
That's what I was referring to, I believe.
I think, I don't want to miscast what Chris Murphy said. He's probably listening. But again, the press certainly has less power than we used to. And you know, maybe wrongly, the press was the arbiter of common decency for many decades in this country. But you know, politicians are akin to where people get a lot of news now. Influencers, creators, they're famous people on the internet. That's who they are. And they have a responsibility to call it out when it happens. It's just really hard. Like, again, this is in a leaderless party. No one, like, attention matters. Getting attention matters. This is one of my beats. Like, Ro Khanna can call it out. Chuck Schumer can call it out. Alyssa Slotkin can call it out. But, you know, which random normie in Ohio is listening to any of those people?
Well, I think sometimes in our politics,
true,
we treat Democrats like the protagonists with agency, and Republicans are the villains who will do what villains do. I sometimes think we do the same thing.
True.
With people on the internet now, that of course Democratic politicians are going to say the same thing, but there's nothing we can do about the influencers. But influencers have responsibility.
Not on the right, though. That's only on the left, by the way. Not on the right. You better believe their influencers fucking fall in line, except for the ones that are literally rogue agents that are now enemies of the party, like Candace Owens and Nick Fuentes, and Tucker Carlson.
Part of this is, I think,
there are some insane YouTube tiles out there, man. There are some
for sure. But the I don't know. I think sometimes we have to, if the people who are going to be helping to shape what people view as the kind of bounds of appropriate political discourse, if that's not going to be coming from politicians or mainstream media, if it's going to come from people on the internet, then that comes with responsibility. You know, like in 2024, I think a lot of people felt like you had people in the kind of manosphere, the kind of independent, kind of right adjacent podcast world, embracing their power, but not their responsibility, right? Their power to influence, their power to get big people on, their power to reach tens of millions of people, but not their responsibility.
Yeah, they're just an unfrozen caveman lawyer. They don't know what's
right. Yeah, yeah. I'm just a big chicken. You know, I'm just a big chicken.
You know what's funny about that? I have some data on this week. The AP came out with a poll about media habits, and it's a really interesting poll because they also poll teenagers. But all the elite sort of things that we do as
minors,
former DCers and political junkies, listen to podcasts, subscribe to newsletters. I'm trying to think of some other ones. Oh, pay for subscribe to news. Vast majorities of Americans don't do those things. They really don't. And by the way, podcasts are a little different because they'll also watch it on YouTube or whatever. But the one thing that has really popped is influencers and creators. For a long time in these polls, could be Pew, could be AP, they'd ask people how they got their news. Social media was just sort of an umbrella term. That could be Snap, could be YouTube, it could be Meta, whatever. Could be
clips of mainstream content, by the way, as well.
Totally. But they actually asked specifically about influencers and creators. And near majorities of Americans say they get news from influencers and creators now. And that's a huge shift in just a few years. And so that gets to what you're saying about responsibility.
A little bit, kind of, but not really, but kind of, but not really. Like, it is a huge shift, but we had an issue in the past where when people would say they get their news from, like, news sources like Fox and everything, you know what I bet? I would bet this. I'm going to make a risky gamble right now. Lord God, if you're alive in heaven, I want you to crush my balls if I'm wrong on this. Americans 30 years ago never got the majority of their news from news sources. Even when they said it came from news sources, they still got the majority. Ah, no, I'm just kidding. They still got the majority of their news from pundits on those news sources. So Americans might say, oh no, I get the majority of my news from mainstream media like Fox News. No, you don't. You get it from the pundits on Fox News, which is different. You're listening to Sean Hannity. You're listening to Jeanine Pirro, to whatever, Maritua, the fucking lady, and Tucker Carlson, and these guys. These are the people, or Bill O'Reilly. These are the people you're listening to. These are not reporters. They're pundits. This is what you're getting the majority of your news from. You think it's mainstream media because they're pundits on mainstream media stations, but it's not really mainstream media reporting. That's not really what's happening, you know?
The influencers and creators are now on par with, according to this poll, local TV news. Radio, terrestrial radio, still matters. Search engines still matter, way more than like AI, and like television. And so like that's just really, really taken off. And I agree with you. And you've seen that with Theo Vaughn and Andrew Schultz after the election when, you know, they're deporting.
I mean, you can say that most leftist podcasts fall in line, except some rogue agents too, can't you? For center left podcast, absolutely not. Or for center, no, even the center left doesn't. Far left definitely doesn't. The far left is hostile, is openly hostile to the Democratic Party constantly. And then the center left people are all like, fucking constantly fucking themselves to seem like they're based and centrist or whatever.
I agree with you. And you've seen that with Theo Vaughn and Andrew Schultz after the election when, you know, they're deporting, rounding up and deporting people and separating mothers from their children or whatever. Doge. I didn't vote for this because I was just playing the humble, unfrozen caveman lawyer. But they have to, I think they're becoming more responsible, actually, at least in terms of acknowledging their power. These people were at the inauguration for the President of the United States.
And I do think that we're due for a similar turn on the left of people with big platforms who reach a big audience, viewing a responsibility. And you know, we're here and we try to have honest conversations. But part of part of what being responsible is you try to be honest, critical where you think it's helpful, critical maybe where you think it's unhelpful, but needs to be said at times. But view what you're trying to do as more than just saying what you happen to think or feel in that moment, right? Like that's what I think the difference is between what Obama did in that press conference you're talking about and what a lot of members of Congress do every time a camera comes in front of their faces, which is just take a moment and say, you know what, I'm going to take a beat and make sure that I'm sharing good information, or like interrogating a bias for one moment, or knowing that even if I feel something in the moment that I believe is true, I know that I have a responsibility to my audience to not become a tool of the right.
Yeah. I also think I really want to pay you guys a sincere compliment, and I'm friends with you. We live in the same city. We socialize. I get that. I still listen to this podcast despite knowing how personally annoying each and every one of you is, because you are willing to interrogate collective assumptions on the left. You are willing to tangle with those ideas. You know, we saw it this week with the Ken Martin interview, but you guys frequently will have people on. And I think this a lot about a variety of left-leaning media. You don't just tell people what they want to hear. You tell people sometimes, maybe not as much as other news organizations, what they need to hear. And I think that's really important, because I do think that maybe this is the Obama, you know, example, but like wrestling with ideas is like really good. It's really good and healthy. And not, there's just such blind partisanship now. And this is where I will say on both sides that, you know, the battle for ideas is hard. Well, it's hard to inhabit, not the middle, but it's hard to present nuance to people. That's why I wrote 10 paragraphs in that freaking Puck article
before I could get to the point, because I had to say over and over again, Trump inspired January 6th, Trump inspired mail bombers. The Trump Republican Party welcomed Nazis and liars and mainstreamed this poison.
Eliminator, thank you for the 5 gifted subs.
But, you know, social media has taken it to another level and other people are getting yanked into it.
I think what we're talking about, and that's very nice of you to say, it is not my experience that there's a lot of blind partisanship on the left. My view of where we're at right now is actually...
But sorry, blind negative partisanship.
Yeah, that's for sure. No, I agree with that. But what I was going to say only is I think like what we're circling, which I think relates to the conspiracy theories, the willingness to celebrate or kind of tolerate or kind of even just sort of minimize political violence, like it's forbearance, which is just the idea of restraint and being like kind of willing to lose and willing to... take a shot to your ego at times in politics.
This is why us old millennials are the best generation.
We are the best generation.
We are the best generation because...
We were vaccinated against Republicans by George W. Bush. Continue.
We had debates in our dorms, you know? At Georgetown, we had something called Red Square, which is a free speech zone. I know that sounds anathema now, but like you could have debates and interrogate things. You didn't have social media poisoning it, you know? I don't know. Maybe that's an elite view, but...
Baby boomers went to the right. Gen X is the last redoubt of Donald Trump now.
Well, boomers, by the way, boomers are... I wrote about this last year. Boomers have drifted to the left because boomers now are hippies. Boomers are our parents. So they still hold on to some, you know, pluralistic values. Gen X is the bad one because they were Alex B. Keaton. Like, the thing that happens is your politics in your 20s, like, that's what it generally is later in life. And so the Gen X folks... You know, put aside all the rock music and pop culture. Like, those are the Alex B. Keaton.
The Gen X has really kind of moved to the right, but then also some of the Gen Z has moved a bit to the right. And millennials are actually not moving to the right at the same degree over time as previous generations have. The millennials are holding out. Greatest generation. All right.
Hear that, Brokaw?
True.
Yeah, what happened to him? All right. Before we go to...
Wait, is this guy a millennial? Hold on. I forget the ages of everybody now. Hold on. What's the name of the two guys on Pod Save America? Pod Save America hosts John Lovett. That's Lovett, right? John Lovett age. He better be at least 45. 43. Fuck! Hold on. How old is the oldest millennial? Is 45. Fuck! He barely counts.
Break. I want to thank everybody who has become a friend of the pod, subscriber.
Points in the most recent. I think Emerson had him up 33. Go to helixsleep.com/crooked for 27% off site-wide. That's helixsleep.com/crooked for 27% off site-wide. This offer is exclusive to our listeners. Make sure you enter our show name after checkout.
In regards to what you said about news watching, that they watch pundits, can we infer from that position that the political environment was already cultish before Trump or something else? The right wing has been pushing like cultish politics for a long time, but the social media algorithms have created a different world, unifying like the government on the right with the media and alternative media figures on the right with the fabricated reality that everybody on the right now inhabits. That's a new thing. The internet has just ramped it all up to an 11.
So they know we sent you helixsleep.com/crooked.
All right, let's hit some more topics. Plattner, Janet Mills out.
Uh-huh.
Politico reported yesterday on calls from Democrats for Schumer to drop his involvement in the Iowa and Michigan primaries. What was your reaction to the Mills news and the general state of play in these primaries?
Surprised, but not surprised. I think Mills got in late. Plattner got in, last August, September, went super viral, raised a lot of money. Great vibes for the moment nationally for Democrats, you know, raging against the establishment. I am more looking forward than thinking about the surprise because he was up 33, 40 points in the most recent. I think Emerson had him up 33 at the end of April. This is a jump ball race. Like, it's going to be very hard. And Graham Plattner does have...
As a fellow millennial from 99, how old is the youngest millennial? Excuse me. You're zooming, motherfucker. Leaf cutter, ant fuck. You're zooming hard. Get out of here!
...have baggage. And it's not even the Totenkopf tattoo or whatever. It's the Reddit post. I think we saw an article in the Free Beacon today, which is an oppo dump for Republicans, showing that Plattner, you know, paid for his house with a loan from his wealthy father, not... the VA, like he said. I just think there's lots of stuff there. And by the way, all this is to say, he can...
We'll watch the Taylor Lorenz stuff in a bit. Hold on.
Still win. Trump's at like 33, 34% approval. I think Maine is tougher than certain states, and here's why. And again, he can win. And a lot of times you win with a pure contrast. And she's unpopular, Susan Collins. I think her unfaves are like 57%. They got to win there. They got to win Alaska. They got to win Ohio and Iowa and all these places. Maine is the oldest electorate in the country. So it's also not very partisan. You've got a third of the state is independent, John. So, you know, that helps someone like Plattner, I think. Like, I'm not from the system that could appeal. You've got that Maine second congressional district, which was represented by Jared Golden for a while.
Who is, I don't know anything about this district. Which seat, is he winning? He's going to win this election, right? Like, there's no chance that he would lose in fucking Maine to the conservative, right? I have no idea what the polling is or anything. The general is dicey. Oh, Collins has been there since 97. God damn! Suzanne Collins is a pretty strong candidate who beats polling. She beat the Democrat in 2020 by like 10 points, despite polling 10 points behind.
Hmm. Differently. Like, Plattner's a lib. Golden was a moderate. Both have tattoos. But he won in Maine.
Sorry. I tried to maximize my Chrome. Hold on. My process is catching up. My bad.
Maine 2, which is a district Trump has won in the last two presidential elections by being just purebred moderate, Jared Golden. So, you know, putting on Reddit that black people don't tip, that women shouldn't get so drunk that they get sexually assaulted. Honestly,
I love this episode that I forget which content it was from Crooked Media, but Pfeiffer and Alex Wadner did a piece on this a couple weeks ago. And it was really interesting listening to Alex. And I thought she was very sharp because I think a lot of the initial commentary supporting Platner when jumping the race was coming from men. Mm-hmm. And when these posts came out, not that Alex Wagner wouldn't vote for Graham Platner or Susan Collins, but like I think women might be a little squeamish about this. About him in a race against a woman that, you know, has successfully won over and over and over again. Also brought some reporting to the show. I learned from some Republican pollsters that they had 12 to 13% of past Susan Collins voters going for Janet Mills in this election. So that plays to what Schumer was probably thinking about. Like, this is an independent, older state, and we need someone safe to run against someone who's been reliably reelected. So Platner's got some work to do, I think, to reassure. He's a young millennial with tattoos, a history of inflammatory Reddit posts. I think Republicans are sitting on more.
Does Uptime even matter anymore for computers? This is 19 days, right? Does it actually fucking matter?
Or stuff like that's a debate, and we need someone safe to run against someone who's been reliably reelected. So Platner's got some work to do, I think, to reassure. He's a young millennial with tattoos, a history of inflammatory Reddit posts. Clearly, I think Republicans are sitting on more stuff. Like, that's why I brought up the Free Beacon example. And he's got to convince voters in a state. It's like an old state. And it's going to be tough for him. But in this environment, Trump's approval ratings are absolute dog shit. That's why we're talking about Alaska. That's why we're talking about Maine. That's why we're talking about even Ohio and Iowa.
We're in the home stretch here of the California governor's race. The two highest vote getters will move on to the general. Post-Small, we've seen polls that show Becerra rising. CBS poll this week had Steve Hilton leading with 16, then Steyer at 15, Becerra at 13. Other polls have Becerra higher. Where's your head at on this race right now?
I think someone smartly framed it this way to me. And look, nationally, like, you might not care about governor's race. California matters. Like Gavin Newsom will set a tailpipe emission regulation and the rest of the country will follow. Like, that's what California is. So, yes, these candidates are underwhelming. Someone compared it to the 2020 presidential primary, where you've got not just Tom Steyer once again spending a lot of money, but you've got all these candidates who fail to catch fire. They pop in certain moments and fade. Javier Becerra is just sort of emerging. The last four polls, two independent, I think, and two sort of partisan, have showed him climbing. And having clear momentum. Steyer and Katie Porter are having a very hard time connecting with high information voters. Their negatives are very high. For all the money that Tom Steyer is spending, they kind of are hitting a ceiling. Becerra has kind of come from behind to go to the front. I didn't quite get it either. It kind of came out of nowhere organically. He hasn't spent a lot of money on television.
I believe he spent the money he has. I think he spent.
Yeah, he went up on TV like three or four weeks ago.
At a key moment when as Swalwell was dropping, before Swalwell dropped, he's
up
on the air.
Yes.
And so he's up on the air at a moment where all of a sudden there's all these Swalwell voters saying, oops.
Yes. And Javier Becerra is a boring person. Javier Becerra, I talked to someone in the Biden administration about this the other day, kind of aloof as HHS secretary, not incompetent, but just sort of like, he's not lighting the world on fire, okay? But he does have two things going for him right now in this governor's race, but the primary is in June. There's a lot of confusion among voters. People don't like the choices, and they're just kind of falling back on him, which is sort of similar to the Biden experience in 2020, right? You can win the primary at 23% of the vote, 25% of the vote. I'm not saying it's totally the same. And he's Latino. I mean, a third of the state is Latino. And I think the first part of that spot that went on TV about a month ago, it wasn't like Prop 50. It wasn't like Adam Schiff versus Katie Porter. Like, we got to stop Donald Trump. It wasn't like Swalwell. It was my parents were immigrants. And it leads with bio. And then it gets into, working class, affordability issues, healthcare, prescription drugs. And so for all of the, forget my term, lib slop that you see in some of these TV ads and campaigns, like just raging against Trump and trying to go after the hardcore college educated white MSNBC viewer voter, he reaches a different kind of voter than just that. And that's the thing, like Porter, Steyer, Swalwell, there was no data suggesting they had any numbers of people of color in this state. And so Becerra is just emerging as like a safe choice right now. Steyer's going after him already. He's not a great debater. There's two debates coming up this coming week, I think CNN and NBC. So we'll see if he can make it all the way to June. But he is the one with momentum right now, but it's sort of like boring momentum. I don't know the word for it.
Yeah, no.
Steyer's the best choice. No, I haven't followed that race too much. I would say Steyer, though, is probably a really bad choice because he was on Hassan's stream. Woo, yeah.
Watch the last debate.
I don't know, actually.
There was another debate this week.
It was terrible.
The first debate, and there's a moment where they were all asked if they would support a per mile tax for electric vehicles because California has a very high gas tax. I think it's like 60 or some odd cents a gallon, maybe a little more now. So there's this idea that, well, if we switch to electric vehicles, then no one's going to be paying for the roads, even though California has the worst roads in the country and we pay the highest gas tax in the country. And so the question is, would you support a per mile tax for electric vehicles? It got to Becerra, and Becerra said, well, it's definitely something we ought to perhaps take a look at. If that's something the voters are interested in, then I could get behind it. And then you go to, I think it was one of the Republicans, and they're like, you're going to make everybody log all their miles? Hell fucking no. And I was like, that makes it like there's a like the passion on that stage. I talked to Katie Porter about this in my conversation with her, that California is in an emergency.
Yes.
We are losing people. We are losing our industries. And the only people up there that seem to have fire about it.
Is that true? Is California like losing their industries? I know some people have moved out. It's always hard to tell, though. Like sometimes when people talk about politics or economics or whatever, you'll have like it feels like you run into like it'll be like this is this city. And then like, this is this city. And people will be like, it's over. It's fucked. We're losing everything. It's completely fucked. It's completely fucked. It's gone. These guys are taking over. Austin, San Francisco, on the decline. It's gone. Austin, Matt, big ups. Huge ups. But I don't know. Sometimes it feels like people blow it out of proportion, but who is leaving California and who's moving in? Over the past 25 years, California, what is the date on this article? January 21st, 2026. Over the past 25 years, California has had its slowest rate of population growth ever recorded. The primary driver of this slowdown has been California residents moving to other states, a trend that remains near record levels, despite having abated somewhat since the pandemic. It is a remarkable turnaround. For California, once the epicenter of population growth in the United States, the affordability crisis, especially housing costs, has played a key role, with lower-income households much more likely to leave the state than higher-income households. Much has been made of the California exodus to other states, and rightly so. Migration over the decades has the power to reshape the state. From 2010 to 2024, the year of the latest data, almost 10 million people moved from California to other states. Damn. While just over 7 million people moved to California from other parts of the country. Okay, damn. According to the American Community Survey, in fact, according to the Department of Finance estimates, the state has lost residents to other states every year since 2001. Is there a way, can I see, is the reapportionment of the House is every 10 years when we do the census, right? What if, like, the historical numbers for the representatives of California been? Will the Google AI tell me? How many representatives has California had in the U.S. Congress over the past 100 years? Well, I don't even know. No, certainly before that. When did California become a state? Way before that, right? 1850, yeah. Okay, just making sure. Over the last 100 years? Actually, wait. What was the last state added? Was it, like, Alaska or Hawaii? What was the last state added to USA? Hawaii in 1959. It's kind of crazy if you think about it. Donald Trump and Joe Biden, when they were born, they were like 15 years old when they got to see the 50th state and the 49th state added to the... They lived in a time where there were 48 stars on the flag. that's kind of crazy if you think about it, right? Sheesh! Okay, 52, 53, 52... 45, 43, 38. Okay. We lost a seat. What the fuck? Where the fuck are the illegals at? God damn it! Net interstate migration, 2000. Okay. And then we see them leaving. During the height of the pandemic, the flows out of the state became so large that almost every demographic and socioeconomic group experienced net losses. For example, California used to gain college grads, even as it lost less educated adults. But in the last few years, the state has started losing college grads as well. Less than a bachelor's degree, or more. Higher income adults are less likely to leave the state. Not by too much, though. From 2011 to 2020, for sure, but housing has become the dominant reason cited for leaving California. Oh, hold on. I wonder if it happened in 2021. No, fuck. COVID probably fucked with so much shit that it's probably hard to guess. When did California allow ADUs, houses? That was in 2018. In 2018, around 9,000 ADU is additional dwelling unit, which I think allowed you to add to rent your garage out or to rent a room out, I think, to somebody to live full time. People do not realize how fucking cancer AIDS California zoning is. Where is the neoliberal meme? What people think California is versus what it actually is? It's disgusting, bro.